sensibly. Welcome this morning to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is a delight to be with all of you this morning. So it's been a really hard week, and I think it is a good time for us to be together. And you are all welcome here. You are welcome here no matter your gender. You're welcome here no matter who you love. You are welcome here no matter what your immigration status or what the color of your skin. Everyone is welcome here because everyone matters. And that is what Unitarian Universalism believes. Every single person matters. And we are not going away. So welcome here this morning. I especially want to welcome you if you're new this morning. And if you want to find out more about what's going on in this congregation, there's a little slip of paper on the chair in front of you, which you see, they're being held up. And you can fill that out, or there's the little code, so you can do it on your phone. And that's how you can find out more. We have both coffee and soup downstairs after the service, and we have coffee online, and the link came in your order of service this morning. And I just want to let you know that something's a little different about our coffee service this morning. We're going to have two tables, and one is going to be for hot chocolate and tea, and one is for coffee, so the lines are a little less long. And I also wanted to let you know that after the service at 12:30, we are going to be showing the film No Place to Grow Old, which is about the growing problem of homelessness in Portland among people who are older. And so there's, like I said, soup. And unlike last week when I was misinformed, there really will be a list of opportunities for you to serve if you are homeless, if you want to help with our homeless ministry. And one of the things that people need, the shelters need, is the creation of meals. And so we have the opportunity for people to work together in groups and get to know who each other is, because nobody wants to prepare a meal for 60 by themselves. So I would like us now to take time to greet each other. And please greet people you don't know. And our question for this week is, how have you cared for yourself in the last week? Hi, Matt. How have you cared for yourself this week?
Are
I would like to invite Paisley up to light our chalice this morning. Our chalice lighting is by the Reverend Kirsten Schmidt. Through hatred perches in the seat of power, and cruelty fractures the rule of law, while the few seek to control the many through fear and anger, and so much all around us is heavy. Within each and every one of us still, beauty is enfleshed. Goodness has a home. Mercy has a servant. Joy bubbles up and out and through, and the light of truth burns so, so bright. Let us say our affirmation together. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our eyes to love ourselves and our neighbors.
My name is Alana Bellwood. I am your lay leader this morning. I use she, her pronouns. And I am reading to you a poem by Elizabeth M. Strong called A Dream Awakening. Today we celebrate a dream awakening. Today we worship with renewed hope in our hearts. Today we act on an audacity of hopes and dreams for the future. Today we begin the hard work for justice, equity, and compassion in all human relations. For today is a day like no other, and it is ours to shape with vision and action. Let us worship together and celebrate a dream awakening.
As Izzy comes forward to light our story, I just wanted to let people know that they're seating in the front if you're looking for seats.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
If the children would like to come forward and sit closer to see the pictures of the story, you're welcome to. My name is Izzy. Some people still call me Liz. That's fine. I'm not picky. Today I'll be reading a story adapted from Leo Tolstoy called The Three Questions by John Muth. There once was a boy named Nikolai who sometimes felt uncertain about the right way to act. I want to be a good person, he told his friends, but I don't always know the best way to do that. Nikolai's friends understood, and they wanted to help him. If only I could find the answers to my three questions, Nikolai continued, then I would always know what to do. What? When? When is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one? And what is the right thing to do? Nikolai's friends considered the first question. Then Sonia the Herring spoke. I know the best time to do things. One must plan in advance, she said. Gogol the monkey, who had been rooting through some leaves to find something good to eat, said, you'll know when to do things if you watch and pay close attention. Then Pushkin the dog rolled over and said, you can't pay attention to everything yourself. You need a pack to keep watch and help you decide when to do things. For example, Gogol, a coconut's about to fall on your head. Nikolai thought for a moment. Then he asked his second question, who's the most important one? Those who are closest to heaven, said Sonia, circling up into the sky. Those who know how to heal the sick, said Gogol, stroking his bruised noggin. Those who make the rules, said Pushkin. Nikolai thought some more. Then he asked his third question, what is the right thing to do? Flying, said Sonia. Having fun all the time, laughed Gogol. Fighting, barked Pushkin right away. Then the boy thought for a long while. He loved his friends. He knew that they were all trying their best to help him answer his questions, but their answers didn't seem quite right. Then an idea came to him. Well, we skipped ahead a little bit here. Oh, boy. Then an idea came to him. I know, he thought. I'll ask Leo the turtle. He's lived a very long time. Surely he'll know the answers I'm looking for. Nikolai hiked up into the mountains where the old turtle lived all alone. When Nikolai arrived, he found Leo digging a garden. The turtle was old, and digging was hard. I have three questions I came to ask for your help, Nikolai said. When's the best time to do things? Who's the most important one? What's the right thing to do? Leo listened carefully, but he only smiled and went on with his digging. You must be tired, Nikolai said. Let me help you. The turtle gave him his shovel and thanked him, and because it was easier for a young boy to dig than it was for an old turtle, Nikolai kept on digging until the rows and rows of the garden were finished. But just as he finished, the wind blew wildly, and the rain burst from darkened clouds. As they moved towards the cottage for shelter, Nikolai heard a cry for help. Running down the path, he found a panda whose leg had been injured by a fallen tree. Carefully, Nikolai carried her into Leo's house and made a splint for her leg with a stick of bamboo. The storm raged on, banging the doors and windows. The panda woke up. Where am I? She asked. And where's my child? The boy ran out of the cottage and down the path. The roar of the storm was deafening. Pushing against the howling wind and drenching rain, he ran further into the forest. And there he found the panda's child, cold and shivering on the ground. The little panda was wet and scared, but alive. Nikolai carried her inside and made her warm and dry. Then he laid her in her mother's arms. Leo smiled when he saw what the boy had done. The next morning, the sun was warm, the birds were singing, and all was well with the world. The panda's leg was healing nicely, and she thanked Nikolai for saving her and her baby from the storm. And at that moment, Sonia, Gogol, and Pushkin arrived to make sure everyone was all right. Nikolai felt great peace within himself. He had wonderful friends, and he had saved the panda and her child. But he also felt disappointed. He still had not found the answers to his three questions, so he asked Leo one more time. The old turtle looked at the boy. But your questions have been answered, he said. They have? Asked the boy. Yesterday, if you had not stayed to help me dig in my garden, you wouldn't have heard the panda's cry for help in the storm. Therefore, the most important time was the time you spent digging in the garden. And the most important one at that moment was me. And the most important thing to do was to help me with my garden. And later, when you found the injured panda, the most important time was the time you spent mending her leg and saving her child. And the most important thing to do was to take care of them and make them safe. Remember that there is only one important time, and that time is now. The most important one is always the one you are with, and the most important thing to do is to do good for the one who is standing at your side. For these, my dear boy, are the answers to what is important in the world, and this is why we are here. I don't think I can come up with any more wisdomous words than that. So if you'd like to stand as you're able, form archways across the aisles, we'll sing our kids to their classrooms.
As the ushers come forward to give us an opportunity to support our community, our safe haven financially, I encourage everyone to consider the other gifts you may be able to give, be it your time, your talents, your ideas, your voices, or even just your attention and presence. Those are just as important, more so than any other material gift you can give us. Your presence here is a gift unto itself. If you are interested in plugging into the community and helping out in other ways, be it joining a committee, helping with the grounds, helping with coffee, helping with CareNet, with the most vulnerable people in our community, I urge you to find someone after the service who knows what they are doing, looks like they know what they're doing at least, and ask them how you can be involved and what you can do with your specific and special gifts. May the ushers come forward, please. Join us in our words of affirmation of giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
From this. There is so much pain in the world. It arrives like an ache or like a hammer, expected or unexpected. And there is more pain across the world this week than there was last week. But there is also joy. Palestinians and Israelis both were united with people they love. Babies were born. The sun blessed our region with wonderful sunrises and sunsets and a glowing light that caught in the needles of trees. People hugged and laughed, and children played. We carry both pain and joy in our hearts. And this is the time in our service when we remember the circle of compassion that holds us all in love and in care, whatever our sorrows or joys. And so I invite people to come up and drop a stone into the water that represents this community. If you have a joy or a sorrow, I will hold the mic, and if you have a sentence or two to share about your joy and sorrow and would like to, you may speak. Otherwise, you are free to go by in silence. Go this way and around that way.
My concern today is for my son-in-law, who on Wednesday will undergo cancer surgery on his neck for a tumor very near his carotid artery. So very sensitive surgery.
In spite of it all, we still exist. Mine is a sorrow. Those of you who are old members might remember my husband, Bob Biller. He died suddenly 5 months ago. I share it with people who knew him because we used to blog here in the 80s and 90s. For those who persecute us, even Mr. Trump.
For all the fear that I have of my children in school with this new administration, but also all the joy that I have for my new niece.
I just want to fire the writers for this season of my show. So if you know, you know.
Mine is a joy and concern for the people of New Orleans. The joy is that they get to let their dogs play in snow that they've never had before. My concern is for the unhoused people who are there.
And one last stone for all the joys and sorrows that remain in our hearts. So now is the time for meditation, reflection, and prayer. We begin with a poem by Danusha Lamaris, Small Kindnesses. I've been thinking about the way when you walk down a crowded aisle, people pull in their legs to let you by. Or how strangers still say, bless you, when someone sneezes, a leftover from the bubonic plague. Don't die, we are saying. And sometimes when you spill lemons from your grocery bag, someone else will help you pick them up. Mostly we don't want to harm each other. We want to be handed our cup of coffee hot and to say to the person handing it, thank you. To smile at them and for them to smile back. For the waitress to call us honey when she sets down the bowl of clam chowder. And for the driver in the red pickup to let us pass. We have so little of each other now, so far from tribe and fire, only these brief moments of exchange. What if they are the true dwelling place of the holy, these fleeting temples we make together when we say, here, have my seat. Go ahead, you first. I like your hat. Let us sit in silence and remember the ordinary kindnesses of our lives.
loosen, loosen, baby. You don't have to carry the weight of the world in your muscles and bones. Let go, let go, let go. Loosen, loosen, baby.
Tracy did, but it feels very personal to me, so I'm going to try not to cry, but it's not a promise, okay? We Were Made for This by Julia Fehrenbacher. I want to fill this space with words that will erase the distance between your certainty and mine. Make room under the big, empty sky for grace to sit. Move closer. Until skin touches skin, eyes see eyes. Maybe we can take a deep, good breath, clear body and mind of all that's come before. Promise to pay attention. Stay. Especially when it hurts. Maybe this time we will see that it has nothing to do with who we have been or who we think we are, and everything to do with being fiercely here, like breath is for life. Yes, like that. Maybe, perhaps, we can begin and begin again with, I don't know. See, that it takes just one step toward, just one step to erase the distance. That was only ever a thought. Dinner's on the stove. Will you join me?
Tim McGraw. I'm not obsessed with country music. Mike's a pipeline driller. Kim's a drive-through teller. Johnny's a drug dealer. Bob's a concrete sealer. Terry is a soldier, Tom's a church lead bowler. We're liars and lawyers, lovers, sisters, brothers, people like us. Watch the blues on TV, we get so angry, blame it on DC. People like us, all God's children. If we're willing, we can be building a tomorrow we can trust. But it's up to people like us. We wear Jordans and we wear flip-flops. We wear wingtips and luchesis with tube socks. We wear high heels. We wear work boots. We won't ever know each other till we walk a mile in each other's shoes. People like us watch the blues on TV. We get so angry and blame it on DC. People like us, all God's children. If we're willing, we can be building a tomorrow we can't trust. But it's up to people like us. We can point the finger. There's enough blame to go around. But I wonder what would happen if we turned that finger around. Yeah, people like us, we're a preacher with a dream. Put a man on the moon, we can do anything. Yeah, people like us, we're all God's children. But if we're willing, we can be building a tomorrow we can't trust. But it's up to people like us. I believe in people like us.
That was amazing. So I started the short book, Serviceberry, or as we say in my part of the world, Sarviceberry, by Robin Wall Kimmerer this week. The book is calm and beautiful, sharing details about the cycle of life and how the wild world offers gift after gift, kindness after kindness, to us and each other, making all of life possible. Sarviceberries are dear to my heart. As a child, I would go with my grandparents to Cocalalla Lake in northern Idaho, to a cabin owned by my great-grandfather. A large sarviceberry bush grew right next to the cabin. I would pick the blue, sweet, gritty berries, eating while trying to pick enough so my grandmother would bake a pie. It was such a joy. This week, I attended to the sweetness of life, its joys and its wonder, trying not to buckle under a second round of shock and grief, as the new administration washed away like a tidal wave decades of the work we and our ancestors have done to make a reality the worth and dignity of each person and the care of the interdependent web of life. It has been worse than I imagined. The campaign threats were not idle, so we know more will happen to take down policies and laws that have supported Unitarian Universalist values. So I grieve and rage again, and I imagine you might be as well. I am finding it very hard to face what is so obviously here, a powerful populist movement combined with billionaires who do not want democracy and believe humans do best when they are controlled by narrow standards of proper behavior ruled by a white, patriarchal, wealthy oligarchy. But we should not be shocked, really. A brief review of American history shows controlling power has risen here violently and harsh many times before. Slavery, segregation and lynching, hatred of immigrants, the use of the poor for gain by the rich, and the destruction of lives as people have been declared un-American for their political beliefs. Again and again, these waves of hate and oppression have washed over our country. But that isn't all that has risen here. So have justice movements. They have made it possible for so many to have say in their lives, to thrive and live without fear. Our country has freed slaves, given the women the right to vote and decide when and if they have children, offered the New Deal, the right to marry, for gay people, the right to marry, and ended the worst use of pesticides and declared standards for clean water and air. Again and again, people who wanted freedom and care have pushed back against tendencies for hate and oppression, and they have succeeded. As Mariah J. Stephan wrote in a Wages Nonviolence blog, we know that every advance towards a more inclusive, multiracial democracy in the United States has been met by backlash. That in turn has been met by a new generation of courageous people willing to struggle for fundamental rights, freedoms, and the indignity in the face of bigotry, ignorance, and violence. From abolition, reconstruction, and the civil rights movement, to modern-day struggles for worker rights, clean air and water, and gender and racial equality, Americans have collectively risen to seemingly impossible challenges with vision, resolve, and strategy. So, the backlash has happened once again. And those with a desire for power and control have laid down their hand and are grinning nastily across the table. Those of us who thought the other team was bumbling incompetently have learned otherwise. And so, as always, it is people. People like us, who care about justice, freedom, and kindness, who will push back. And when we have pushed back before, we have made progress toward an inclusive and loving world. In Western societies, during our lives, more people have had more rights than they have ever had. This has happened, and it can happen again. Of course, this is easier said than done. It gives no guidance for what to do tomorrow, or next week, or next month. Some among us have fought oppression their whole lives, even at a time of expanding care and justice for all. And the rest of us, during these times, can follow their lead. Even so, for all of us, no matter who we are, the way through this particular moment is uncertain. And it will continue to be uncertain. There is no savior. There never has been one. It is just people like us rising to an impossible challenge with vision, resolve, and strategy. As the poet said in this morning's reading, maybe we can take a good, deep breath, clear body and mind of what's come before. Promise to pay attention, to stay, especially when it hurts. Maybe this time we will see that it has nothing to do with who we've been or who we think we are, and everything to do with being fiercely here, like a breath is for life. Yes, like that. Maybe perhaps we can begin and begin again with, I don't know. See that it takes just one more step toward to erase the distance that was only ever a thought. All we can do now is take one step forward to erase the distance. All we can do now is the next right thing. We know from history that when the time is right, when people have prepared themselves, one action can begin an unstoppable movement. To begin, even as we grieve, to calm our nervous systems by grounding and centering ourselves and connecting to our hearts and our spirits. And we can use this to ward off despair and fear. Despair stops action. Fear only helps during immediate attacks, because fear also corrodes. It sends us into survival mode and shuts off our thinking minds. This does not move us forward. So it grounds you, calms you, keeps you healthy and energetic. What releases your best thinking, creativity, and compassion? Begin here. Who do you feel safe with? Who lifts your spirits and makes you laugh? Who helps you do what you could not do alone? Spend time with these people. When news and social media ramps up our heartbeat or sends us to the couch with wine or weed or chocolate, stop watching and reading. What is important to know is that authoritarian governments and authoritarian actions do fail. And they fail when people stop cooperating. As Gene Sharp wrote in his book, Power and Struggle, The Politics of Nonviolence, by themselves, rulers cannot collect taxes, enforce repressive laws and regulations, keep trains running on time, prepare national budgets, keep direct traffic, manage ports, print money, repair roads, keep markets supplied with food, make steel, build rockets, train the police and army, issue postage stamps, or even milk a cow. People provide these services to the ruler through a variety of organizations and institutions. If people would stop providing these skills, the ruler could not rule. Mass non-cooperation is only possible when people have built trusted relationships. Non-cooperation can be dangerous, and most people aren't going to do it unless they know others will join them and support them. Often leadership for these movements comes from unions, who already have the skills to build trusted relationships through organizing. Unions can rally workers to actions of non-cooperation. They simply need to organize among themselves. Our society is so interconnected, non-cooperation in strategic areas stops the country cold. These large actions require significant organization and strategy from diverse coalitions. This means relationship building between people who have not known each other and may have had conflict in the past. So what does that mean for people like us? It means one right thing to do now is create and strengthen relationships. It means getting to know people more deeply and building understanding and trust with them here, at work, in neighborhoods, at exercise class, at shelters that serve those who are unhoused, in all the places that we go. It means partnering with organizations that serve people who have been targeted by the administration and or are working to resist. Building relationships with people who are different enough that they make us a little uncomfortable is good. We need to stretch beyond ourselves. This isn't about politics or convincing anyone of anything. It is about breaking down isolation and individualism that feeds our national polarization. I am not asking us to start relationships with people who might be unsafe, and there are people who might be unsafe, but also to remember that being uncomfortable is not the same as being unsafe. We can create and strengthen relationships now, and this prepares us to engage in transformative actions as much as we might want to. This is not the time to fight or flee or freeze. It is a time to do some ordinary work and have some fun parties with all kinds of people. Parties were suggested in this morning's Atlantic magazine as a thing to do now. In Tolstoy's story this morning, read by Izzy, Nikolai asks, when is the best time to do things? Who is the most important one? And what is the right thing to do? The wise one answers, there is only one important time, and that is now. And the most important one is always the one that you are with. And the most important thing is to do good for the one who is standing by your side. We can't help everyone who will be hurt by the executive orders of just this week and what happens in the following weeks. But we can help the people next to us. We can help those in the organizations we partner with, like the DACA students at PCC who have been targeted and are undocumented, and the members of Western Farm Workers, some who are undocumented as well. As much as it might seem so, this is not a hopeless time. But it is truly an incredibly difficult time. It asks for our courage and the decision to live our values. It is a time to tend to our spirits and to our hearts, to build relationships, to care for and offer ordinary kindnesses to the people who are near us. Then we can pay attention, so we are prepared to act in the tidal wave that takes down hatred and the actions that are trying to turn our country into an authoritarian, white, patriarchal empire. We are not alone. The majority of Americans do not want this. Other Unitarian Universalists do not want this. And that is our power. Already moral voices of our faith and other faiths are speaking out, reminding us all to act with love. They are laying the groundwork for the next right thing that people like us can do. I read the book Sarvisberry this week to remember joy and all the joyful moments that I remember in my life where they have been. And I also watched The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. At the end of that movie, Frodo says he cannot go on. And Sam answers him, I know. It's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here. But we are. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered, full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end, because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing, the shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. Those were the stories that stayed with you. They meant something, even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back. Only they didn't. They kept going because they knew they were holding on to something. And Frodo asked, what are we holding on to, Sam? And Sam replied, that there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. Let us remember the good in the world and that it is worth fighting for. Now let us sing together. Number 1020 in the teal hymnal, but the words will be on the screen. So go forth with love, with kindness and courage, and do the next right thing. We extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with us until we meet again. Now the front half of the congregation can face the back, and we will sing our closing hymn, Carry the Flame.